always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast, brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and play a $5 lineup and get $50 worth of free lineups on Prize Picks. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this frustrating Thursday night by Raj Chapalu. Raj, how you holding up, bud?
That was a game that happened, technically. A little frustrating. I thought they had multiple chances, but no, I'm good. It's kind of crazy. I can't believe like they're going to play another game in less than 48 hours. Travel one day, come back and play game three against this young, feisty, playing sports that aren't basketball team. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Over the course of the show, I want to talk about Austin Reeves bouncing back. I think that is a critical development here for the Lakers. I also want to talk about the game that LeBron played, which was once again pretty overwhelming for OKC. Honestly, like if I would have told you, Raj, Austin would bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron would remain really good.
Yeah.
And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would have to sit like basically the whole third quarter with foul trouble. I would say to you, like, that feels like an opportunity.
Yeah.
And yet the Lakers lose by, what was it, 18?
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot that went into it. I thought DeAndre Ayton probably played the worst game of his playoffs so far.
Tough night.
Jackson Hayes came off the bench and wasn't significantly better. And, you know, with Jared Vanderbilt out, the Lakers need a lot from Jake Laravia, who was somehow worse in this game than he was while Vando was healthy. So that kind of hurts. And I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on this, but we have to talk about the referees because they were just that poor. I know I can let you dip if you want to dip while I talk about them. I'll give you warning before I do. But I thought that was one of the worst refereed games I have ever seen. And what's crazy is that Mark Dagnall feels the same way. Like he
has no consistency. Yeah.
Yeah. Now part of that is because he has no shame whatsoever. But also I think that like Thunder fans and like all basketball fans watching that game were wondering like what the hell was going on. So, at some point over the course of the show, we'll discuss that. Where do you want to start?
I think Austin is the most important story in this game.
I agree.
Not to get on a soapbox or nothing. I thought some of the conversation around him got it really strangely uncomfortable. I thought there were some extremes taken in terms of the conversation.
Like a lot of people were waiting for him to play that poorly.
Right. And so it was kind of some confirmation bias, right? Of, hey, like, you know, where's the fouls now? And you know, I was like, this is a guy that averaged 24 a game in the regular season. None of that was fluky to me. He's gotten better every single season. His playmaking has gotten better. Oklahoma City is one of the best defenses maybe in the last 10 years, right, in terms of the numbers that they have.
They're one of the best defenses I've ever seen.
Ever, right, in terms of lockstep defenders that they're able to throw at you. And he was, I know people don't want to hear this, but this is just the context you have to take. He's coming back from injury where he probably should not be playing basketball. I mean, I'm sure he came back early, doesn't want to make excuses about it, but I thought tonight his reads and his attack in the pick and roll was much more intentional This is what he does, right? This is what makes him a problem. And some of the things that I've been asking for is, hey, you don't have to get all the way to the rim on this team. This is what they're waiting for. That's the bait that they give you. They're going to be high pressure. It reminded me a little bit of the 2020 Lakers, Anthony, where they would ball pressure at the top, right? With and they didn't have, I mean, they had like Avery Bradley doing it. They also had Alex Caruso doing it, strangely. And then the guy, you know, they had we had AD waiting for you, but they have Hartenstein and Chet basically waiting
or
for
Dwight.
You. Or Dwight, yeah, or JaVale at times as well. But with OKC, yeah, you can get in trouble over penetrating. And I thought tonight did a much better job of driving, finding that skip pass, finding the mid-range shot, finding the pull-up three. And, you know, 31 points, gets that 23-point career high in the playoffs off his back. And, you know, not a perfect game by all stretches. Also had 5 turnovers, but I thought you saw what makes Austin Reaves Austin Reaves. And this is hopefully some of this lose the battle, win the war, right? You lose this battle, but the more it's more important you get Austin going, in my opinion. And so you would love a split, obviously, but him finding a way to find an impact in this series, I thought was critical coming out of these two games. Whether you won one of them or not, it was going to be tough to take one in Oklahoma City no matter what. But I thought Austin getting going was just vital. And we mixed some stuff up, had LeBron screening for him at the top, have Lou Dort be the opposite guy guarding instead of Chet Holmgren all the time, kind of mixing up their screen coverages. And again, I thought his decision-making in the paint was much better. He got to the line as well. Still a lot of calls that I felt like were missed. A dangerous flagrant call with Shea on the elbow, or, you know, holding his elbow there. But overall, I thought, you know, Austin felt in his offensive rhythm for the first time since coming back. Even in the Houston series, I don't think he was fully back to his usual self. Tonight felt more like it.
Yeah, I am one of the people who was really, really hard on Austin after that first game. And look, I was really, really hard on him because he was really, really bad. And so, like, you know,
sure,
we have to call it like we see it. He has been bad against that team all year. And so, like, he was a concern coming into the series, played that poorly in the first game of the series. And I walked away from it being like, shit, is this just how he plays against this team in particular? And I'm happy to say that, like, you know, I thought he played really well, really well in this game. And not just like significantly better than the last game, because had he like not been actively scoring on the Lakers, he would have been significantly better. But I thought he unlocked a couple of things against OKC. He used that snake dribble a lot, you know, where he, you know, the screen is set and he comes around super tight on the screen. And because OKC's bigs weren't playing at the level, he was able to, you know, weave his way around the screen and put his defender in jail. And I thought he operated a lot from that point of advantage and was quite good when he was able to do that. I still think there were some plays where he got his head out in front of his feet a little bit and over penetrated. Yeah. And that's how he kind of started the game. So there were some like nervous moments initially, but I thought he did a good job of kind of calming himself down and playing a lot better. Is it, you know, so much better that like it negates the previous 4 games that we've seen him against his team? No. He's going to have to keep it up, but it was good to see. And I think the biggest development, maybe not even as far as this series goes, but as far as like this team, this organization goes moving forward, huge development that Austin was able to look like a good basketball player against this team at some point this season.
Right. And again, this is the best, like not just from a, they have the best guard defenders in the league, which I think they do. They have multiple guys who probably have a case for first team all defense, right? And on their team, plus they have DPOY guys who maybe if Wemby doesn't win one year, could have a chance to get one. You talk about the first 2 plays. I think it was blocked by Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein on his first 2 shots of the game. Those are those 2 drives where he went to the rim. Some of those are calls you probably get in the regular season, but in the playoffs, you don't get any of that. And then I think the Thunder's this is not even just a complaint to go into the refs wise. This is just smart from them as a team. Their physicality, Anthony, to start games, like they set the bar so high of what a foul is that, like, we're going to have, I know you more than me probably are going to go on a tirade about the refs, but they set the bar so high that what a foul is, just that bar is difficult to ref, in my opinion, where on the inbound, Lu Dort is grabbing LeBron's arm. Caruso is, or Kayson are in Austin's chest in his jersey. And that's not something you can call every, I mean, you could, but like it would
be good.
But they're not going to in any case. And that's something that I just noticed. And that takes a while to get used to. I thought he did a really nice job against Kayson in this game. I thought AJ probably did the best on Austin, which is, again, don't Google his contract. And AJ was monstrous as an offensive player too. He just turned into Shea down.
AJ and Mitchell is probably the reason they won this game.
Shea sat down and just gave his powers to AJ. I don't know how that works, but they do some strange stuff over there where I think he just kind of
talk dance. They go on there at halftime. They just, right. You know, do all the stuff. And then AJ Mitchell's like, oh right. Shit, I'm an MVP. How about that?
Yeah. Jared McCain got it on the third quarter. No, they do some strange stuff, but Austin finding his way. And I thought he would eventually. I know that he struggled against this team and this is a tough team to score on. But I thought, again, him getting going was probably the most important part. And it's disappointing that I thought he hit Ayton. You mentioned Ayton at the top. So many momentum plays where it's a 2-point game. Lakers on a run. Find Ayton in the short roll, and he misses the little hook. It's like, that's the one you got to hit. And he's had
He airballed a layup, Raj.
Yeah. Ugh.
He got the rebound on it. But he airballed a layup. It was funny because one of my prize picks today was DeAndre Ayton getting a double-double. And he had plenty of opportunities to be able to get there offensively. And he grabbed 10 rebounds. I'm like, if you just have a normal shooting day, you know, now I wound up coming up half of a LeBron 3 short from winning $400, but it was like, you know, and eight and not getting the double double. But I was like, I was just watching this, like, how, you know, how bad a game you have to have, Raj, as a center to be 1 of 7 from the field.
It was rough. Yeah. And, again, I think
Jovan had the stat. He at least texted me and Pete that Ayton started, game one, 5 of 5 from the field.
Okay.
And then ever since then has been 1 of 14.
Yeah, that's rough. He had a really good start to game one. That's correct. Yeah, I forgot about that. It's rough, and I'm going to give OKC some credit that whenever he catches it in the paint, if he puts the ball down, that ball is gone. Look, I'm sure he's feeling like his arm is getting raked, and I don't disagree with that at all. But that's something where you got to be strong with the ball, and that's much easier said than done. There was a play where he got an offensive rebound over AJ Mitchell, and again, OKC swarms so quickly that you don't realize you're open even when you're open. Like, just put the ball back up. You caught it. The guy's 6'4" in front of you. Like, he's not going to be able to stop you from putting it up.
But well, the reason he's not, though, is because, like, at any moment, Chet can fly in and block it. And at any moment, Iheart can fly in and block it. Like, also, he has really slow reaction times, you know?
Yeah, but
some of his habits lead to those poor reaction times.
But he caught it and turned around. And he caught it and then like did a turn around and tried to kick it back out. I don't remember what the play resulted in, but yeah, that's the one. I'm like, just go back up. But he's had a rough after that game one start. Just the finishes, he's got to hit those. That's what the defense gives you, that drop coverage, that pocket there is open. Austin has hit it nicely. LeBron has hit him nicely. These are contested. Don't get me wrong. Like, Chet's getting a hand up. Iheart's getting a hand up, but you're in the paint. You're here for your touch around the rim, right? That's one of the That's one of these cells of DeAndre Ayton, is he has a nice touch around the rim, one of the more efficient bigs, you know, in terms of scoring. But 1 for 7. That's rough. And I don't think any of those were mid range jump shots. They were all floaters in his wheelhouse.
One at the free throw line.
One. Okay. Yeah, I remember they were pretty open.
Mm-hmm. No, his free throw line jumper was wide open. Then he missed an actual free throw. And then he missed a couple of push shots, airballed the layup. And I also thought, like, you know, part of the reason that Jared McCain and AJ Mitchell, I think, really give the Lakers problems is because both Jackson and Ayton, when they jump, they aren't like quick elevators, right? They have to like really, you know, swing their arms and get their whole body involved in jumping as high as they can possibly jump. And when you're a quick guard, Austin is really good at this. When you're a quick guard and you can just get the ball up on the backboard as quickly as you possibly can, you could take advantage of those lengthy gather moments that bigs sometimes have. You compare it to like one of the things that I thought AD was incredible at was blocking shots without jumping as high as he possibly can.
Yeah.
He was so good at timing it and knowing where the ball had to get to the backboard and beating the ball to the backboard, right? He was so good at understanding those angles and the timing necessary there. Whereas like Jackson and Ayton are both obviously super athletes at crazy physical sizes, but they, I don't think, have any understanding of like what they need to do to block shots. All of it is like, if I'm going to block a shot, I have to jump as high as I can. I have to have a crazy windup, which also makes you have to jump higher, right? Rather than just getting your hand up in the air. Like it's just, it takes everything in their being to get up as high as they possibly can. And by that time, the Jared McCains, the AJ Mitchells, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexanders, the Kayson Wallaces, the basically their whole fucking roster.
I was like, how long are you going on that? Like, you're like Mark Dagenau, just start naming assistants. Just
the Nick Collisons, they're right. Getting the ball up on the backboard. Yeah.
No, for sure. No, those guys are really good switch beaters. And another thing, just to that point, Chet Holmgren destroyed us on the boards. I mean, that's another place they have a lot of, it's not, obviously they're better than Minnesota, but it reminds me some of how Minnesota just, when you take one thing away, they have a counter that opens up another floodgate, right? So you put a big man in to handle Gobert, but then the big man you put in to handle Gobert can't guard Anthony Edwards, right? So it's like this domino effect that just keeps going. Oklahoma City, similarly, where, you know, JJ, I think you mentioned this in the offside chat. You were like, yeah, I kind of like them going to small ball. They went to Rui at the center.
I was like, I like them going to small ball. And then I was like, wait, no Vando, no Jake. Oh, fuck. They are really small.
Well, yeah. it's like we're going all small team. We're going all shooting. But then Chet Holmgren's like, oh, I have a free run to the rim.
Yeah,
he like, turned no into one, King. No one's on me. I'm getting and by the way, Chet Holmgren, like, you're too good for this, man. You're too good. Like, don't need all the flop where he pretended to be hit in the face. I was like, no, I actually like you as a player. Don't do that.
It should have been a tech. Like, at one point, they were calling techs for flops.
Oh, that ended a long time ago. I don't remember the last time.
I know,
time,
but, did. Like, why? No, it happened this year at one point. I was like.
It did? Okay, I don't remember.
You remembered?
That's no, I don't remember.
You remembered?
No, I don't remember.
You. I mean, like, the referee.
Oh,
like,
gotcha.
I was,
okay.
Like, watching the referee make that call. I was like, this whole time? I'm here. I guess we're here. We'll talk about LeBron in a second. Flopping is a significantly bigger problem facing the NBA than tanking. Significantly bigger. Because it's the thing that all of my, you know, neighbors and stuff like that talk about here. Oh, the league has gotten so soft. They're always flopping. They're always this. They're always that. They're shooting 50 free throws a game. They're gaming the system. You know, all of these guys' stat lines are crazy inflated compared to the guys that we grew up watching. Like, this is, and when I watch OKC, it's the nth degree example of, I'm not kidding, man. This is one of the best basketball teams that we've ever seen. Like, this is not, I'm like, this is an incredible basketball team. They have done everything right from a roster building and development standpoint. Sam Presti is a fucking wizard when it comes to building out an organization. I cannot say enough nice things about this team. Because, you know, as far as like, if it was just about basketball and I only had to watch them on 2K, but the reality is we watch them on TV and we watch them play the way that they do. And they are a disgusting basketball team to watch. They are in a putrid watch because you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander when they should never have reviewed Austin Reeves's foul on him. But you know what they did? You know why they did? Because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander fell as if he had been grabbed and thrown into the stanchion. At one point, Raj, his flailing and his falling and his flopping almost hurt Jackson Hayes and Marcus Smart on the same play. And it's because nobody knows where to land around him, because at any moment, his 6'5 body is just going to be anywhere. Who knows? And then you add on top of that, like, OKC fans are telling me in my mentions right now, because I said that was a really poorly officiated game. OKC fans are like, oh yeah, well, look at the total fouls called. Okay, let's look at the percentage of how many fouls were called versus how many fouls were committed. And then let's have that conversation. Like, they're talking about the play. Austin was a foul. Like, I thought that they were going to go back and review the foul and say that Austin had fouled Shai before Shai committed right. What I figured was a flagrant two. When Kelly Olynyk did it to Kevin Love and popped his shoulder out of place, that was a flagrant two. I figured it would be a flagrant two, but instead they kind of split the difference and were like, well, we're going to keep the foul, but it's only a flagrant run one on Shai, who very clearly was trying to hurt Austin in a way that would have taken him out of the rest of the series had he been successful. Right. And it's like, you can't, and you watch somebody like Alex Caruso play defense and he's fouling on every single instant of every single play. And it's off of the ball. It's on the ball. It's between whistles. It's all the stuff. And then anytime he's called for a foul, he looks at the referee as if the referee has just insulted his family. And it's like, we can't do this, man. And all they've done is trained the state with the lowest education rates in the entire country that this is the way that basketball should be played. This is what we're doing here. And all I have is a bunch of J6ers in my mentions telling me that this is the way that basketball should be played. And I'm saying, no, man, if any of these Oklahoma City Thunder players did any of this stuff in a pickup game, they would get their ass kicked. They would all be jumped. They would be taken off of the court. They would say, never come back here, because this nonsense that you're trying to do, there aren't free throws in pickup. What are you doing here? Play basketball. And it's like, they're so good. I wish I could just respect them as a basketball team, because they're so good. You don't have to do this. You know, one of the guys that I follow on Twitter put it perfectly. And he said, watching the Oklahoma City Thunder is like watching Sherlock Holmes plant evidence on the people he's arresting. And it's so perfect. It's so perfect, because they are one of the best basketball teams that we will watch. They're going to win a championship again this year, and they have 100% earned it from an organizational standpoint. But not a single soul who doesn't reside in Oklahoma City is going to respect what it is that they've done, because they've so thoroughly bastardized this sport to the point where they are the nth degree example of why the NBA's ratings have fallen off an absolute cliff. All right. I feel better.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad you were able to get that off. A couple things. One of my favorite, I guess, I don't remember you brought it up, but who did? I love just turning the NBA more into rules that are followed in pickup. Like, you play pickup basketball and you just realize none of this stuff flies anywhere on there. All the flailing and stuff like that you can't really do on a consistent basis. That's, I think, getting more into the purity of the game in that manner. But I'm not sure Shea was trying to hurt, you know, Austin on that play purposely. I will say that they do a lot of things where
I don't know what it would look like if he wasn't, though.
Sure, but I think they just probably got tangled up, and you know, he does this a lot where he accentuates contact on anything he does.